made up of representatives from our groups to do projects and how they will be working together with the three components in approaching a single problem. Things like that can really add some meaning points to it.
That's a good idea. Yeah, that makes sense. And that's, I think NSF really, the reviewers really like concrete stuff, as opposed to sort of boilerplate.
And that's it, sort of what you're doing and sort of what I also did in my class. And it's probably worth spelling it out and getting some mileage out of it.
We should probably point out past projects that we've done like of the similar kind, where some of the students who are doing systems were going to your class. And
yes.
Yeah, I think we should
utilize
all of
that. We should get some mileage
that.
Out of that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And Mario is in your class. All your students were in my class. Definitely we should get some. And Nishi was in my class. It's, these are things to
Okay, I think that's...
And we have 2 pages to fill, so there's a lot of space you can add in terms of things.
Yeah. Okay. So Ming, I did look at the section that you wrote, and I had some suggestions, which I sent over email. Mm-hmm. I think it's shaping pretty well.
Yeah, it's more details, I know.
Yeah, it's more. I would just say more formalism.
More formalism.
Because you
also
already had.
Yeah. Also, I'm waiting for the previous sections to become. Better formalized too.
Unfortunately, we don't have the luxury of doing sequential updates.
Right.
We have to do parallel updates at this point.
I keep an eye on the development of previous sections. I'll be working on this.
So I think in terms of content, the content is there already. Right now, I'm...
I guess the one question to ask is there 4 years worth of work? And probably the answer is yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So one of the things that we need to do is to fill out that table that we have.
Right.
The schedule.
it's probably pretty reasonable already, right?
You mean this table, right? This one?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I need to fill it out, basically.
Oh, it's not filled out? I thought you had a bunch of things there.
Yeah, I need to fill in the tasks, and this is just cut and paste from my previous proposal.
I didn't even look at what was there.
Yeah, but
I thought those doubts were really meaningful.
Yeah, if you were reviewing this proposal, then you would know that there's nothing in there.
It has the section titles. I mean, what more can I ask for?
Yeah, that's true, except that one of the titles is missing. The holistic management is missing. Yeah, so we'll have... we'll have a little more fleshed out table that would hopefully convince people that this is a multi-year effort, 4 years. My current challenge, as I'm working on the background section, I'm trying to write the section in to convey the core gaps in the current state of the art. So I actually changed the title of the section to say something like gaps in the state of the art, right? Instead of background and related work. And what I want to do is to bring out each of the gaps that exist and we are addressing in the proposal explicitly in that section. Say what has been done, what is the gap? What has been done, what is the gap? Across modeling caches, modeling contention, partitioning caches, and managing cache hierarchies, right? So these are the four gaps
so
that
somewhere
I see.
You also need to hit that point which I mentioned, namely how big is the basic problem.
Right. So I think that would need to, that would certainly need to be addressed in one of these, and it needs to be brought up right up front in the summary and the introduction.
The formula in Ricardo's presentation that is missing.
It needs to be added to the. To the proposal, it will probably go into the foundations.
Yeah,
so
I don't think it really matters so much, but if you want to add that, that's fine.
No, I think that formula is useful because it does quantify the complexity of wastage, right? As a quadratic, at least in that formulation, it seems to be quadratic, right? Because we have pairwise wastage, and pairwise wastage is quadratic.
Yeah, but we have never observed it. So.
Oh, we have.
Not yeah, quadratic this. In the number of virtuals.
It is, yeah, right. I mean, but
it's
that's
linear.
Yes.
That's linear.
No, but that's wastage as a percentage of the total working set size. And the working set size is proportional to the number of workloads. So,
so yeah, you explained this and I still don't see it.
Okay.
So the vertical is wastage as a percentage of size.
Of the total size.
Right.
Of the total... And that total size is a...
So instead of 100% size, you're now using 110, let's say, or 120, where 20% is the wastage. So it's linear. It's and that percentage is going linear with the number of virtuals. That's not quadratic.
No. What I mean is that the actual wastage is quadratic. The fractional wastage is also quadratic.
So you're saying the fraction itself is a function of n. That's what you're saying, right? So you're saying the increase.
See, I think I kind of formulated that in one
you
of
wrote it down, but it didn't make sense to me, and I didn't argue with you.
Okay, yeah, it's good to argue because.
So you say that delta, this increase, is proportional to n. So let's say this is in percentage, really doesn't matter. So this is some kind of a ratio, let's say.
It's not delta. What does delta mean?
Okay, so maybe you're probably.
I'm saying actual wastage.
The actual amount used, let's say it's W minus W min divided by W, right? You're saying this is proportional to N. Right?
What is W here?
This is the actual used, and this is...
So wastage.
Yeah.
Right? Divided by... the sum of all, well, let me just say total working set.
So by W min, I mean sum of all. So this is your sum, and this is the actual used, right?
Okay.
That's wastage,
okay.
Right? Divided by the total used. That's your, that's
okay.
What
and
you're...
And this is what we're quantifying.
This is what, well, as a, you're doing, since you're doing percentage, you're saying it's really this divided by W. You're saying this is proportional to N.
Right.
Right?
That's what the graph shows.
Correct.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm saying that W is also proportional to N. Because as N increases, W will increase. And if we want to express wastage as a some relation of a function of n, then that would be n squared.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's okay. Basically what I was trying to say in that email. But now you've gotten me thinking a little bit because it's not obvious.
No, it's not. That graph actually makes it look linear.
Yeah, because we are doing percentage. That's the problem. I mean, if we don't do percentage and just plot absolute values of wastage, relative to the size of the so the x-axis should actually be this W min that you're talking about, and the y-axis should be wastage.
Yeah,
sorry.
X-axis should just be W. Okay. It doesn't matter whether it's W or W min; it should be the same.
Or it could be
W min. Yeah. What do you have? You have N. No.
I have N. I have N.
So
yeah.
N, I think, somehow doesn't.
Right. For instance,
instead of
we do have this thing, right? Wastage in megabytes as you increase n. You see that? That should be quadratic. Although it doesn't look that way, but it's supposed to be quadratic. Because our derivative is linear.
Okay.
But yeah, this, yeah, it is a little, I was waiting to get actual numbers from Ricardo so I can plot
whatever you want.
Yeah, I could plot a graph that actually shows something that's quadratic or superlinear. This seems to be superlinear, right? Or this, the top graph?
It does look superlinear. Yeah, that's possible because it's approximated by straight lines. But
so Ming, what are your thoughts here? So you've been kind of easily quiet on this. I want to make sure that it's making sense to you. You're sort of the reviewer here. I mean, what polls does the reviewer put?
But you just are debating what the data is about, right? The data is it's more than linear.
No. The question is, does that show a superlinear wastage or not?
The data seems to show superlinear.
Okay. Well, yeah. I wasn't convinced earlier, but so I'm trying to see how best to present it so that nobody would question it.
Yeah, that's true. I agree. I think we need to replace these two plots ideally with something that's
clean.
That's clean. You don't have to go through all this mumbo jumbo.
This is totally ridiculous. I'm just ashamed that I'm studying this. So you're saying that this is roughly a derivative that you're plotting on the y-axis.
This the second one. The first one, no. The first one is not a derivative.
Yeah, but percentage itself is not really derivative. Because derivative is when you do dw by d, whatever is the x-axis.
Which is n. The thing, it turns out to be a derivative because w is proportional to n. That's why it becomes like a derivative.
Yeah, but that's not shown. That's not, we haven't convinced anybody of that. Although, yeah, it seems obvious.
Yeah, it has to be clean. It's not clean. So what can we do? We can do this, wastage versus n, which we already have, but even that doesn't appear quadratic.
That doesn't appear quadratic.
It's not as straightforward.
So I'm trying to see, what if we do this minus this divided by n?
Okay.
Then if you show this to be roughly linear, then you're okay.
But why not just show,
Because it's, you already shown that and it's not that clear. So what if you divide by n, because if you take a log factor, for instance, that might flatten it out and show that it's not log, derivative.
I sent an email to Ricardo asking him for some data. Yeah, that's basically what I was saying. So what I say, actually, what I want to plot is perhaps what you said earlier, W. And that should be quadratic. Because what we have is this, and we know that W is proportional to N. So say W is some K times N, right? So N is W by K, and so W minus W min should be this. So whatever this is proportional to W squared. So if we have that.
So W is W min or this W? Basically,
it's just W.
The total
usage.
So this is proportional to N. So instead of N, you're replacing by W over K. So W minus W minus W.
Should be proportional to the waste, to the total combined working set squared.
Yeah. Or to N squared, which is roughly the same.
Yeah. Either this
so
or.
So you've done it with N and it's not so clear. Instead, if you do.
If I do it with W.
I'm trying to think what else can you do. If you do.
What we are saying is that in some sense, as the cache requirement, we could do it with W or W minus W min, whichever shows a nice behavior. Sorry, W min. Either W or W min. One of those. Because W min is actually sum of all the working
you're
sets.
Better off showing wastage against N squared.
Against N squared?
Yeah, because that should be a straight line according to you.
It should be, because we already have that.
And if you see.
So instead of wastage in percentage, you'd say wastage, and this would be N
this
squared.
This would be N squared. It'll just be cleaner. You'll have a cleaner plot, is my guess, because it'll get flattened out. And all those kinks that you see in that upper one would get more flattened out.
Okay, and that then needs to be tied into
because
the original
many places
formulation
you say
of
linear, and so we have to fix that.
Linear?
Yeah, there are a couple of places where you say linear. Or maybe, again, you're saying that it's...
I would probably be saying like wastage percentage is linear, but that's not...
Yeah, you don't want to say that.
It makes things more confusing. So, what we have is wastage, which is W minus W min, is sum of all the pairwise wastages.
Yeah.
Right, that's really what we are arguing here. This is a pairwise effect.
Right.
And I remember that we were talking about groupwise effects, and
yeah.
And to me, it's
well.
It's
I don't think
you want
I don't think there are any groupwise effects.
No,
because every miss is a pairwise event.
Hello. Yes. Yes, speaking. Yes. Good. Okay, can I come by after I finish working around 8 o'clock? Okay, then tomorrow morning? Okay, I'll do that. Okay. Yes, I do. Yes. Well, the deductible is waived because the other party assumed responsibility. I'll sort it out when I come tomorrow morning. I have to leave right now. Okay? Yeah. Bye. So this does indicate quadratic.
Yes.
In N, right?
In N, yes. But I don't think that there are any super quadratic effects because ultimately every fault
will only require one.
It's caused by one guy and it evicts one guy.
Right,
so
right.
These are all, so pairwise effects can describe all the interactions.
What I was curious about, whether it's subquadratic or not, because of this groupwise effect.
So that's why I think when you plot this, you should see. So if you want to show subquadratic, then you have to do something more where you
I don't want to show subquadratic. I'm just wondering if it becomes subquadratic.
If there is, so you can actually you can take a curve. You can take this thing and try to fit it in with a curve that says y is equal to k times x to the power
3 over 2.
and that could be a variable, x to the power a, and find the right a that fits.
The problem is we don't have enough points.
That's true.
I mean, even to claim quadratic, we don't have enough points.
But you can look at the goodness of fit for each of those. You still have 8 points, right? That's what I see.
Okay, so
So in terms of our agenda items, I think for sections 3, 4, and 5, our agenda items are largely there.
Doesn't the new plot give us the best fit?
The new plot will just plot whatever function you give it to.
Okay. The other graph that needs help is the one that you emailed me last night about throughput.
Throughput.
But first of all, I don't even understand this again. Part of it is when throughput changes, the MRC shifts somehow. That's the claim, right?
Right.
The claim is that when throughput changes, MRC blows up in the y direction, but not in the x direction. This is roughly the claim.
Yes.
I don't understand that. Because MRC is for a specific phase, right?
Right.
When you define MRC, you're talking about a specific phase. All the analysis is happening for the phase. And when you talk about MRC, you don't talk about time. Time is not an issue.
Right.
You only talk about access sequence and what it does.
Yeah.
So where is throughput coming in? Throughput has to do with time.
Right.
What am I missing?
Let's say that we have a very simple web service.
Yeah.
And it's
it
does exactly the same thing for every query.
Fine.
But for every query, it has a fixed amount of work that it needs to do.
Correct.
Let's say it has some data based in memory that it looks up.
So I completely understand how you could generate this.
So then the MRC would be per request. Okay, so your MRC is capturing just the behavior of the system as it services a single request.
So you're just duplicating the pieces of this thing many times instead of fewer times.
Right.
That's what
so, for instance, I mean, all the variable data associated with the request are not cacheable because
I see that
because
part
you are, so the whatever gets cached is sort of, let's say, the core mechanisms, some pieces of code, some parts of that are repeatedly used. Regardless of
saying the number of requests, a phase would remain the same. It would include all these guys.
This is all speculation, right? But this is what the speculation is, that the kind of work or the work that you need to do for every request is approximately the same. The only way it differs is things like, okay, you need to get different pieces of items that are not cacheable.
Right, but you know, this is why I'd written down somewhere there saying we need to define phase. I had mentally I thought of phase as one where the MRC is roughly the same, but you're saying it's not, because now your phase is somehow connected to throughput.
Phase is not connected to throughput, by the way.
It's not.
A phase is just like some stable behavior in the system.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
In terms of, say, cache accesses.
I see.
So if you have, it's not related to throughput, but when you have, instead of one request, if you have 10 requests being serviced at the same time, the effect that we saw is that the amount of cache data that you need to service all 10 requests the same as the amount of data that you need for one request.
Okay, so it's not exactly... Right. So somehow that has to be worked in. It's not cleanly working in, because when you talk about accesses and MRC, it's totally independent of time. There's no time coming in at all. Whereas in throughput, you're implicitly talking about time.
Throughput is...
And it's how many copies of the same phase you're running in unit time or something like this. It's some weird thing, and I don't know exactly
how to explain it.
Ming, can you explain?
For that particular experiment, the experiment is done in this way. So you have a web server multiplied by a web server. And so increased throughput means that you increase the number of
requests.
Yeah, no, per second. I completely get all that.
Yes. And then,
but now I'm looking at what is the definition of a phase? Because for you, it's the same phase.
But
it's
there's
the
no
same
phase
phase,
there.
But it's not.
There's no phase there. Then the MRC is for the whole workload.
So,
no, but a lot of the things, at least when I try to formalize these things, I have to specify these things clearly, right?
Right. So phase here would be a set of overlapping phases that all share the same data. That's really what
that
is going on.
That complicates things. So the description is not clean anymore.
The question is, do we need to talk about phase here at all? Or you could
well,
just talk
about...
it's
there in every definition of yours. It's there in wastage, it's there in whatever...
I thought phase is a portion of the time.
It's a, yeah, it's a...
No, it's
yeah,
not,
some
but it's
a
portion
of
the axis, it's not time. So there's no time.
A portion of the axis. What's the axis? Axis.
Yeah.
But axis is...
It's independent of time. It doesn't matter how long it takes you.
It's
that's the definition of phase. At least that's how I've been dealing with it.
That is true. Right. That is still correct.
Yeah. So now, if I have to deal with phase...
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, when I...
Here, the phase becomes kind of irrelevant because phase was just one step to getting towards an MRC. But what we are saying
so
here...
So you're saying if I increase throughput, the assumption is that what I see in a phase... Actually, let's just call it a phase...
Right.
Is being duplicated many times over, and it's all happening, and the analysis has to happen as if it's multiple copies of the same thing.
It's not
right.
Duplicate. What do you mean by duplicate?
It is duplicate.
The
right?
same
I mean,
work
because
is
you're
being
doing
duplicated.
Multi-threaded. You're saying it's all happening on multiple threads, right?
Yeah, and the reason the phase kind of becomes
because I was trying to see how
because all
explain.
These phases are overlapping in some sense. Because all these threads will overlap in time, their phases are overlapping, but in the end, what really matters is that what is the size of the working set within those phases, and it turns out that it doesn't matter how many phases you have, you still have the same working set. Because all of those phases are doing basically the same thing.
What we have not described, so even though phases are well defined, and because we needed to define reuse rate,
Flood rates. Yeah.
But so we needed to precisely define those things.
Yeah, I'm a bit confused too. So I thought the phase is defined with respect to the workload.
Yes.
Not a thread.
Yes.
Because if you have multiple threads, then
correct.
I think they are the same
that's exactly
workload.
Right.
Part of the same workload, right?
No, but it could. What if they're from different workloads? Then the definition of a phase is not clear anymore.
No, the phase would be a single thread. Would be a single thread
yes.
Because think about a workload. That's where threads do very diverse things.
Right.
They do very different things. Right. Let's say there is a sort of a browsing thread versus an actual order thread.
Okay, this is fine. But what's your definition of workload? Is a process a thread? Then a Ruby's application have multiple workloads. Is that your definition?
You could define it that way,
but
it's not convenient because we want an MRC for the entire workload.
For the multi-threaded application.
For a multi-threaded application.
And then from that
but you're right that we should probably still stick to threads because in the end, what runs on a core is a thread. And what uses cache is a thread. But in this sort of situation, what you have is...
But then you can't. Then it becomes a challenge to define a phase for these multi-threaded workloads.
So that
whole definition falls apart.
I think it's better to stick from the application perspective. The application cares about performance, and the application can have multiple threads. And the phase should be defined with respect to the application, not the thread.
You would like that, but
I would like that.
Yeah,
but depending on how they are interleaved, you would get completely different characteristics. And you are assuming that a phase is associated with a set of characteristics.
Right. Okay, so let's consider the simple case where you have all threads doing the same thing. They're using the same data in the cache.
Yeah.
It's all shared, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's important. I think that's really important that distinguishes workloads from threads, I think, because threads can actually share data.
Yes.
But processes cannot share data. So in this case, the multiple threads of
some web server, data,
they're working on different data, but they actually share common things.
So it's like a common data, but different
instructions. Yeah.
Like
yeah, exactly.
Sorry, different data.
Common instructions. So they share this core working set that resides in the cache.
Yeah.
And therefore, as you add the threads, that working set doesn't change because that's shared across all the threads.
That's the model you have in your head.
That's the model, and that's the assumption or speculation that explains
that,
the result.
Yeah. And over there, I wanted to sort of say that the picture you have is one of a smooth curve. You definitely don't want that. You want to show something where you actually see steps.
Yeah. So yeah, that curve is a little bit unusual because it's something like this, right?
Right.
Something like this.
Yeah.
And that there is a knee up here, but the ankle is very soft. That's the problem.
In reality, if you zoom in low enough, each of those is a step because it has to.
You mean each of these?
Yes. Well, because it's averaged out, you see it less, but it really is a step. I mean, if I run a process many times with different sizes, clearly I'm going to see where the thing will drop. It has to be stepwise. MRC, ideal MRCs are stepwise. If you have only one process and only one thread, then.
But could these steps be softened because there are multiple threads running?
I think it's because they're averaged over multiple runs. This is my guess.
Yeah.
Or maybe there are multiple threads inside that.
Yeah. Could be softened because of multiple threads, but I don't see why. Okay, but if we have more threads than we have, I'm not sure if this guy comes up. Maybe it does. But we have sort of a similar shape. This, right?
Yeah, but this doesn't help you to support the claim that your MRCs only grow in the Y direction and not the X direction. This doesn't help. This doesn't convince me of that at all.
Well, it does, right?
It could have gone this way too. I mean,
in this workload, it doesn't because
only because of that you're claiming, but maybe it extends in both. Maybe it expands in both directions, and I don't necessarily. I'm not convinced one way or the other. Right.
No, this doesn't convince me that it's going to be true for all workloads, but at least for this workload, it's just a push up on the y-axis.
At only this point, I don't know what is happening at other points.
And other points also, right? Because the shape is the same.
How do you know that it didn't expand in both directions a little bit? How do you know that it went up by 20% this way and 1% this way? You're claiming something that's very specific. I think that it would be nice to see that with a simple example where where it shows the steps. That's what I think.
Yeah, but sometimes we've seen MRCs which are not steps even for a single round. But
how can that be? It's not possible.
That's probably because we didn't average it out. If we averaged it, maybe we'll see steps.
No, I think it's the other way around. If you don't average it, you have to see steps. If I take an access sequence and I run it with this much cache, it'll tell me how many misses I get. I run it with a little more cache, it's got to be fewer misses.
So what you're saying is that if we zoom into one of these points,
yes,
we would actually see a step access.
Yes, that's what I'm claiming. Yes.
But the problem is that a step at that granularity, you can argue, is not a step at all because...
Yeah, that's fine. That just means that the application is somehow so special that as you slowly increase the size of the cache...
It's like a cache oblivious algorithm.
Something like that, yeah. Well, as you give it more cache,
it
does better. It just has so much stuff going on that there is some improvement as cache increases. So... That's fine.
Which is not the typical case.
I think it just means that that it has a good mix of a bunch of different sub things that are going on. Mm. But I don't think it supports that claim that you have. That's all my point.
So the claim there is okay. The shape there remains the same.
But you're actually making a second claim, saying that the ankle points remain the same on the x axis, and I'm saying that with this picture, I don't necessarily have to believe that.
Yeah.
Other than it happening over here, maybe.
Yeah, we need more analysis on that data before we can.
Yeah. What would be perfect is if you show a stepwise thing where you can see it nicely going roughly. If it shows something like this, then that would be great.
And the knee points on the x-axis stay at the same.
Yeah.
This figure might show that, but we'll have to.
It might show that, but you have to zoom in maybe or something like that.
Why is this important?
Well, it's just to understand the MRC saying that that throughput has this effect. Now, it has some other implications. So when you combine workloads, which is one of the problems that we're looking at, you don't know what their throughputs are. So let's say all you know is that this is roughly twice the throughput of this. Then you could then know exactly how their MRCs will change with these new throughputs. So there are lots of interesting things you can do if that result is true.
But this result is only valid for that particular
workload.
Yeah, for that particular workload.
Yeah, combining workloads, I don't know if this is useful, but for a single workload, it is useful, because what we are saying is that if MRCs are stable, regardless of the intensity of the workload, in terms of the x-axis points, we can still utilize observations that we've made in the past. We don't have to continuously adapt the cache.
And more importantly, for partitionable caches, it says that it really doesn't matter what the throughput is.
It's only valid for workload that is SIMD, right?
Single judge model data. Yeah.
And it only works at the higher layer caches when this size capacity is so small. And if at lower layer, say, fresh, then because capacity is much bigger, so definitely you'll see different. You'll see working viewpoint to be way bigger. Yeah.
Yeah, but that maybe that's actually a good point, saying that maybe some of these solutions are only going to be useful at different levels of the hierarchy, and that's not such a bad thing.
Okay.
Ultimately, the claim was that we are oblivious of the levels and where we are at, and that memories that you can apply this theory to any levels in the storage hierarchy, right? And that's sort of roughly a claim.
Yeah, for me this is important, because for a single workload, we learn about its cache requirements, unless it changes its behavior drastically.
I agree. I think it's a very nice characterization if it is true. But that particular graph, I don't think necessarily supports it.
It sort of does. It doesn't invalidate it, at least.
It doesn't invalidate it.
Right now. So there would be other graphs where would you easily invalidate.
No, but your claim that it doesn't expand along the x direction is not validated there at all.
It's not validated, nor it is easily invalidated. Because what I can think of is situations where the MRCs look very different, right? And then you can easily, I mean, it would be obvious that.
So that's what you meant by nature, which is sort of a fuzzy word.
So can we say something like, well, the cache utilization stays approximately the same. It may not be exactly the same.
No, well, what we can say is something more careful, saying that we want to verify this. We conjecture that it only grows along the x direction and not along the y direction. We have some evidence supporting it. Here is a graph, but it doesn't necessarily.
I agree. I think that would be a safer bet.
And it would be a very interesting conjecture. If it's true, then you could get a lot of mileage out of that.
And the other thing, by the way, which you said earlier, that single instruction, multiple data, right?
That's a good point. Yeah.
It's Yeah, it's a good point, but it may also work for multiple instruction, multiple data, as long as the intensity pushes the all the instructions in this in the same, or rather, if we have an increase in the workload intensity, all the instruction intensities remain the same. Right. So if we have a multiple instruction, multiple data scenario workload, that MRC would have more knees. One for each kind of instruction, right? And this, the rates here would be proportional to the rates of those instructions. And if our workload is such that the intensity is going up, but the relative fraction of those different instructions remain the same, we might still see that kind of maintaining of the MRC.
But I think
it might continue to hold, is what I'm saying.
It may continue to hold, but I think writing down a sort of a conjecture on this foundational part,
I think that
talks
would be great.
About how you combine
combination part I haven't figured out
yet. Not combinations, but even if I combine different copies of the same workload, how does it look? That's what you're really claiming. You're claiming you can combine, merge two different workloads where they're doing exactly the same work.
And they're sharing data.
They're
allowed to share data.
Right. And the only difference is that their throughputs are different. And you're saying, I know exactly how that one is going to look.
Yeah.
No, actually, it's not merging, but it's what happens when the thread throughput changes.
You're right.
And I think that's useful.
I think that's pretty foundational, and I think it's very powerful if we are able to understand that better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a little piece of that puzzle, and why don't I try and write something down, and then you can.
Okay. So, Giri, right now you have control over sections 3 and 4, right?
Yeah.
And you're sort of trying to smooth things out in both of these sections and make them somewhat consistent.
Yeah.
So that's great. I already said what I have been working on, which is just making sure that we, in the background, that...
I'm going to try and wrap up the major changes tonight.
So what I'm hoping is, after, let's say, Friday or Saturday, that I would have exclusive write permission on the proposal so that in the end, whatever comes out seems like it's written by one person, because we need to be consistent throughout the proposal. And if I need help with some of the other things like collaboration and data management plan, I might ask you folks to help with that. So our goal would be to, at least my goal is to finish all the writing that I can do, the first drafts of everything by Friday. And on my part, what remains is the background, which is almost done. I should be committing something tonight. And then I have a few other things, like actually I have case studies, which have not been touched yet. So that will probably take an entire day and broader impact.
So let me just tell you what changes I added. I have made, but I haven't committed them. So in the foundational section, you have the 3.1 says modeling cache contention, and here define this ERSS and reuse and flood rates and so on.
Yeah,
and then. After that was the next section was titled Multiple Workloads and Cache Hierarchies. So
right.
I've broken that down into multiple workloads and cache hierarchies. I've separated them out.
Okay.
And in between them, I've talked about mapping workloads on a single cache. This was the problem that I wrote to you about.
Right. And that was originally in the next section.
Right.
Right. Okay.
So now the stream is the flow is going to be cache contention, then multiple workloads, then mapping multiple workloads on a single cache, and then dealing with the cache hierarchy.
Okay.
And then there's cache replacement.
Can you commit it already?
I haven't committed it.
Can you? This could be very slow for you.
Well, it's not ready yet.
It's okay.
That's okay.
And what are you thinking about in terms of 6.1?
So 6.1, what I was thinking is that if we have a more systems-oriented discussion there, okay, if we want to build like a framework for monitoring and response, so 6.1 is more of the framework for the whole section, right? It includes the monitoring aspects. So that's what I was thinking. Maybe have something like agents that monitor various levels of the caches and send triggers to sort of some centralized intelligence that whenever some invariant gets violated, right? So our invariants are twofold. One is the size invariant, whereby we need to fit all the working sets and the total wastage inside each level of the cache. Mm. So there is a size. And then the bandwidth invariant, which is the sum of all the reuse rates and flood rates for all the workloads, should be smaller than the bandwidth of the cache. So what it will naturally happen, I mean, the reuse rate and the flood rate cannot be smaller, cannot be larger than the bandwidth, because the system will automatically throttle reuse and floods. If the cache bandwidth cannot sustain the reuse and flood, then it will start throttling it.
Yeah. Meaning throughput will go down. So, no, it's not throughput.
The throughput will sort of saturate. It won't go up beyond that. So it's a little more subtle in terms of bandwidth. The bandwidth should be more like equal. So reuse and flood rates is approaching bandwidth limits of the cache. Mm. And that's maybe a trigger, right? So those are the kinds of triggers that we'll have to build at each of those levels. Now the question is whether discussing those triggers should be done earlier or in that section. Mm. I think it's probably okay to do it in that section. We can move it to something earlier if we think that that's required. But that's the first time we'll talk about triggers. And invariants.
Okay.
So that could go into the first section, and then the finger pointing would be, okay, given that there is a performance problem. By the way, triggers could be, like you said, triggers could be firing all the time, and we may not want to respond to every one of them unless there is a performance issue, like a workload level performance issue.
Okay.
So the first approach that you point out very nicely is that, okay, you could respond to every trigger and try to fix the problem right away before any performance problem.
Right.
And that's valid too, right? But we might be sort of in an unstable state for a very long time if we keep doing that. But that's an approach that we could pursue as well in the proposal. And then say, okay, we're going to take a finger-pointing approach, which is triggered by an actual workload performance problem, right? Now, finger pointing is also relevant to the previous case where I have triggers going all the time. I may have triggers from multiple cache levels. I would still need to finger point and take before I take any proactive measures, right?
Sure.
And the reactive measures also require finger pointing.
Right.
So we need to have an agenda item which says, well, you know, how do we do that finger pointing?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then we expand on our initial direction. So that's for this next section. And then for the next, the final subsection, which is remediation, we may have one or two agenda items there. One agenda item is just by changing CPU allocations. The other would be something like cache remapping for specific workloads. And again, you know, the invariant comes in there as well, right? What should we look for when we move across cores? So Giri, I'm just wondering, I mean, the kind of discussion we have for the cache mapping in the foundation section, whether we can use that and discuss these invariants even in that first section itself, because we would have to, right, for cache mapping. We would have to ensure those invariants are met.
So I sort of imagine there's a solution in that section.
Well, once something more is written up, then I could perhaps look into that.
Okay.
But maybe it may all happen when you try to integrate the proposal.
So we could do it at that point also. At this point, I think, Ming, what you could say is that the invariants are established in the foundation section, and you're just going to use them as checks, like as if conditions, to make decisions.
Okay.
Well, the decision making has to be comprehensive, right? Mm-hmm. So, what you have is just a mechanism to know if the result of the if question is a yes or no. But what to do as a consequence of that is what this final section needs to be addressed.
So for the mapping, where you have an optimization algorithm, we have an optimizing problem formulated?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You have an algorithm.
Yeah, so I'm going to take simpler versions and address them, and then say that, we'll take our solutions and see how to adapt it for these more complicated situations where you have A, B, C, D that have not been addressed. But even the simplest version is computationally hard, so it's only going to be an approximate solution.
Okay.
By the way, the simpler version, which doesn't account for wastage or doesn't account for like multiple dimensions, if you have few workloads, let's say 10 workloads, is it still hard?
No, it's not. You can actually try all possible computations.
Right. So my sense is that our problem would not be that large on a per cache, at a per cache granularity.
Right. But if you're trying exponential solutions, anything that goes, if n is more than say 25, you're dead already.
Hmm.
So it may be borderline.
Hmm.
And so these approximate solutions may make a lot of difference. And secondly, you have to do this on the fly, and you have to do this many times. So it may not be totally feasible. It may be feasible during epochs or whatever, where things clean up and you figure out mapping. You remap everything, and then after that, minor adjustments will simply have to go with whatever finger pointing says.
Yes, if we have to migrate workload across hosts, then the search space can be large.
Yes.
You have 100, say 100 workloads.
No, but then even there, you can sort of simplify it to say that we will just identify what needs to be moved, and the system figures out where it needs to be moved, rather than trying to reconfigure everything, which would be completely crazy.
But by the way, I mean, when I say that the problem size is small, it's not. I'm not saying that there are small number of workloads on a single host. There are probably, I heard reports from VMware saying that they are running 1,000 VMs on some of these hosts, right? But what I mean is for a single cache, a CPU cache, like an L2 cache or something like that, the number of contending workloads would be small. Well, there won't be 1,000 because there are so many L2 caches.
In that sense, I think the abstraction that I have is that for an L2 cache, it doesn't even need to know about workloads. It just needs to know how many L1 caches there are, and it could perhaps work at that level.
Then
maybe enough, and there it's completely doable.
Yeah,
you can find the optimal solutions
for multi-dimensional problem with this wastage and
it's also going to be exponential in the number of knees or anchor points you have. So you have to approximate there. There are several levels of approximation that are happening, but these are all possible solutions, possible ways to address it.
Okay. That sounds good. I think we are out of time. So we are meeting on Friday, right?
Yes.
And hopefully by Friday we should have the writing all done.
Yeah, we should have a reasonable amount.
So the main things that remain is the background section, which hopefully should be done today, and case studies, and also I think section 6 we have significant amount of writing
still.
The holistic cache management.
I sort of changed it to dynamic cache management.
Okay. You don't want, you know, like the holistic world.
Because the static mapping is also holistic. You are considering multiple layers too. Yeah. And in my session, I'm mainly talking about how to deal dynamic scenarios.
Okay. Let's read it after you're done and then figure out how.
Ultimately, even the static one might become an approximate solution. So it's not like you. It's unlikely that you will have optimal solutions for the static case.
Right.
So, yeah, holistic really depends on whether there are factors other than the cache that come into play. That's the only reason to make it holistic.
Yeah. Good.
So if you have processor, if you have to slow down something, if you have to connect cache space allocation with the processor allocation and memory allocation, then it would be a holistic solution. Otherwise,
that's one of the things that he's
talking
about.
Yeah. But it'll be mostly hand waving there. We're not proposing anything substantial for that.
I think that you could make it a little bit more formal than what you have right now by saying that, okay, your reuse rates depend proportionally to the CPU allocation,
right?
That sort of stuff. And then you can, because you have a wastage formulation that can be directly derived from your reuse and flood rates, and you can control reuse and flood rates using your CPU allocations.
Yeah, that's doable. They are directly related. The problem is how to relate CPU allocation back to performance. It's performance impacted both by the cache behavior and also other things. So without a complete model that takes into all these inputs into consideration.
But could it be that you could formulate an agenda item which says, okay, to actually solve the workload problem, here is what we need to do. This is how we need to model the problem. And have an agenda item and then say, this is, you know, we're going to look at it. Remember, this is a proposal.
But if you send queues to the processor allocation component of the operating system, you are doing holistic management.
Yeah, I'm just saying that we can be used, but I guess it won't hurt if we have room to talk about that. Because we have premium work, we have strong premium work on that aspect.
Yeah, for now, I would say don't worry about room.
Okay.
I mean, we'll get all the things that need to be in the proposal somehow.
Okay.
Somehow we'll fit them in. All right.
Thanks.
All right. See you guys. Thanks.